the benefit of the microphone, I'll say that I'm Bill Densmore. Thanks for coming. We're in Williamstown at the Williamstown Public Library at a meeting of something that we're calling on an ad hoc basis, the Greylock Citizens Media Collaborative. And there are also folks here from Vermont, so we're taking that in terms of a region around Mount Greylock. This is the second meeting that we've had. We got together a somewhat different group in August. And my motivation is to try and determine whether there's a base of people in our region who are interested enough in community media and citizens media to see if we can pull together a sort of regular collaborative that might meet occasionally or that might work together to develop print or broadcast or low-power FM or web or other sorts of multimedia-based media, all with the idea of trying to foster civic engagement in the region. A little 30 seconds of background on me. I was in the newspaper business with the AP and trade publishing, and for 9 years my wife and I owned and published The Advocate Newsweekly here. And for the last, 10 or 12 years now, I've been involved in an internet startup that's a system for making it easy to buy and sell information on the web. And then more recently, I've been working at UMass Amherst on a couple of research projects, the Media Giraffe Project and the New England News Forum. But there are a bunch of people here tonight who are doing interesting things. And what I'd like to do is just kind of get started initially by going around the room and asking everybody to just say who you are and what you hope to get from tonight's meeting. And then let's sort of reconnoiter after we've done that, because we may learn some things that might change the agenda tonight. We'll discuss briefly how we want to proceed with the agenda and then get started. So you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Matt Piven. I'm from WCFM Williamstown. I'm a senior at Williams College. I'm currently on the board as a public relations director, but level position on the board. Hopefully, Alex Spence, the current general manager, and Brian Hogg, who has a good job of being the next general manager, will be showing up soon after the end of the year. So, we'll see about that. I am told that there was somebody else from WCFM who was here at the August meeting.
Yes.
So, I'm just generally interested to see how we can continue to form some kind of bridge between WCFM and this collaborative.
My name is Steve Pierce. I live in Stephentown, but work in Albany and Troy. I'm with a group called the New York Media Alliance. I've been active for quite a while with the support group for College Station WRTI, I think comes from here, some places. Mm-hmm. Student-run station, though. I'm very involved with a web-based news project called the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center. And for the past year, I've been working on a physical space called the Sanctuary for Independent Media, which is based on bringing people together physically and sharing media and with the media makers. And my interest in this meeting is because of those projects, certainly, but also since I live in Stephentown, I've observed for the 15 years I've been here this bizarre phenomenon where we never hear anything about what happens on the Vermont and Massachusetts side of the mountains, and you all don't really hear much about what's happening in Stephentown and Berlin and those communities. It all comes flying over us from Albany, I think, and misses us physically.
Jeff?
Excuse me.
My
name's Jeff Potter. I've been involved in community journalism since 1983. I work for four community newspapers and currently publish one of my own, the Sheldon Falls Independent in Sheldon Falls, Massachusetts. Bill was my second boss.
I'm Fred Daly, and this is Ben Stern, and together we're the editor and publisher of the Hill Country Observer, which is a monthly regional newspaper. We have a bunch of topics that we're going
to pass around.
If you haven't seen it, the
yes.
Also, some happy to be independent here. And we're here to spread the word about the Observer and see how we might fit into what you all are trying to do.
All right. My name is Jen Thomas. I'm a senior at MCLA in North Adams. I'm the editor of the student paper, The Beacon, and I was an intern for Bill's Media Draft Conference this summer. I also have internships at the North Adams Transcript and the Daily Hampshire Gazette in Northampton. I'm pursuing a graduate school. I'm going to graduate school for journalism, and I'm here because Bill asked me to. And I'm interested in seeing how old models of journalism are going to be moving into a more community-based, multimedia world.
I'm Andrew McKeever. I'm the executive editor of the MCLA campus newspaper. I'll be editor-in-chief next semester. I have done an internship with the North Adams Transcript, but I'm also from Lanesboro, so I'm local base. So I'd like to see what I could do since I'm around for this project and try to get a grasp of where this project is going.
I'm Sandra Thomas. I'm the executive director of Images Cinema in Williamstown. I'm on the board of Williamette, the public access station. I've had a show on WCFM, and I used to be on a show on WRPI. and I'm an exhibitor. I'm interested in learning how we can exhibit in one of the public, on the public airways and in the public spaces.
I'm Jill Proctor. One of my jobs at Williams College is to be the news director. And those of you who are on the receiving end have seen the hundreds of thousands of press releases we put out. Before I went over to the other side being public relations, I worked in television and magazines and radio. And I'm here because it sounded like interesting things might be going on here. And since Williams College is the biggest employer in town, I think it behooves us to be interested in what's going on in the community and to be part of it.
I'm Bob Howe from Bennington, trustee of Southern Mott College, former owner of WBTM AM in Bennington that I acquired from Vermont Public Radio, bought the AM and the FM station. Didn't want the AM, and the AM was started in 1952, local station, so the idea was to keep it local. Transferred it over to Southern Vermont College, and now we're really trying to develop some good things in Bennington, including a communications center of some sort. And this is Karen Trubin.
I'm from the college.
Yeah.
And I work in advancement, I do grant writing and that sort of thing, and I'm very interested in how this project overlays some of our initiatives related to development of the communications program at SVC. And I also oversee communications for the college. We were given WBTN AM, I think about 5 years ago now, and our idea is for that to be not a college radio station, but it is a community radio station serving Bennington rather than being a college radio station. And we are seeking to build a center for community media as a function that through which we enhance our current communications program with a focus on community media and how we educate our students across all forms of media, but with WBTN AM being one of the building blocks of that program. And we're in the midst of developing the concept currently and hoping to have some really interesting conversation about that program over the coming year, including probably convening a major think tank on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's more closely involved in this, David Scribner, will be here later this evening, I believe, to talk in greater detail about what we're developing.
Great.
I'm Ben Chalice from Great Barrington, specifically from WBCR-LP, low power FM station in South County. I've been involved with that, past 3+ years since its inception. And it's a kind of a non-formatted community radio station where we foster community voices and try and serve underrepresented populations. So in that we give a priority and an emphasis on news, public affairs, issues, and the community. And it's one of the more difficult things without funding, for a news department or a public affairs department, it's one of the more difficult things to get on the air when you're relying on all volunteers. there's a way to kind of decentralize a news gathering, public affairs, or, you know, community, regional issue forum, so we can bring that to the airwaves and improve our service to the community.
I'm Andy Potter. I'm also with WBCR LP. And to add to what Ben said, I do a program called Locally Grown. And sort of the model for Locally Grown is sort of a, I call it like a, sort of a catching, you know, a catch-all. It grabs content from, you know, from all of our various programmers that might be producing content. I capture a lot of content, and then each week pull it all together. And so it can be a real mixed bag, you know, lectures in a college or lectures in the community or interviews, what have you. From that standpoint, one of the things that I'm always looking for, like Ben said, is finding that content, you know, producing that content, because it's, you know, I produce a lot. I would love to share it. I have successfully, you know, used some outlets on the internet that allow for that kind of sharing, but it's a matter of aggregating that so that, you know, you can find it up there and you know that it would be there. And so that's the kind of connections that I would like to see fall out of something like this, because, you know, there's so much going on, you know, down south where we are, there's so much going on up here. I mean, it just seems like there's a lot that could happen.
My name's David Kupel, and I drove up here from Millerton, New York. Actually, I know Williamstown because I came to college many years ago. And have an interest in web-based community reporting. We've lost some radio capacity down there to report local issues. The local newspapers have been bought up and corporatized, and just a couple of weeks ago, a sister of mine who was with one of those companies that got bought up said, you know what, David, we've got to look into getting a newspaper on the internet. And so I do some work with Fred and Jenny with the Hill Country Observer, which I think is a great newspaper, and they told me about this meeting, and here we are.
I'm Paul Hopkins. I'm the Director of Community Relations for Northern Berkshire Healthcare, which is North Adams Regional Hospital and affiliated group. My background, like Joe, before I went over to the other side, I spent 11 years in reporting for Berkshire Broadcasting Stations, WNAW and WMNB, doing news reporting and hosting a talk show for about 8 or 10 years. I'm interested in seeing what comes of this, because I think the traditional media in this area have run up against some walls that they don't quite know how to get around in terms of doing what they want to do and making it work financially. I'm worried that I see more and more copy showing up in both the Eagle and the Transcript every day, the same story by the same reporter. The local radio stations have really just fallen away in terms of local news coverage. There has to be a better way, I guess.
I'm Deborah Schneer, and I'm here representing Berkshire Family Individual Resources, and I am their communications person, and I edit their newsletter, the editor of the newsletter. And so part of my interest is in seeing how to help the agency increase its visibility in the community through media, but also my own interest. I've been a reporter and feature writer at the Berkshire Eagle and the North Adams Transcript, and so I'm just very interested in all kinds of media related activities.
Hi, I'm Amy Stevens. I am a transplant. I'm new to the Berkshires. I've been here about 6 months. I came from Boston. I'm the web manager at MCLA, and I'm here because I think that the region's ability to progress on a technical spectrum will depend on whether the region is able to have economic legs going forward. And I see this as central to that. Something I bump up against every day.
Can you just give, just very quickly, an example of the way you bump up against it?
Everything is here is done via print. And I find that when I talk to people about blogs or podcasts or things that in sort of the larger technical economy have been going on for a few years now, I get blank stares. And that's
where news and media is going, and introducing people to that is a burden. Not a burden, but it's a very difficult task.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying the process of it, but I think it's got to come from more than one place.
David, we're doing an intro round.
So, hi, I'm David Scribner, and sorry to be late. I teach a journalism class at BCC, which I I cut it in half in order to come here. In addition, another gig I have, since becoming one of the victims of corporate media, is teaching up at Southern Vermont College several courses in journalism and broadcast writing, and also being hopefully a kind of advisor and instigator of what we call the Community Media Center. I think Bob Howe is here and Karen Tribbett from the college too, and I don't know if you've talked about that, so I don't have to go into it.
That much?
Well, it's a concept. The college owns, as you may know, a commercial radio station. But beyond that, which was given to the college by Bob Howe, in order to protect it from becoming a generic, homogenized part of corporate media. And the question now is how to set up a paradigm, a model, for the rest of the country on how to do community journalism using radio, web, print, and radio, and TV. We're working with the public access TV station. So that's what our charge is, and we hope to get this together this spring. And it will be both a laboratory for students to learn what community media can really be, but also to give voice, to become a resource for the community, and to break down the walls between the ivory tower and the community, so that it becomes a real real resource for the whole community to express all kinds of things that it otherwise wouldn't be able to do.
David, yeah. Neglected to mention to those of you who don't know this, that he's the former editor of the Berkshire Eagle. Two other people have joined us since we started this round robin.
Yes, my name is Richard Kaskin. I'm an attorney in North Adams. I've done some journalism and other things over the years. I would just echo what Paul Hopkins said about the traditional media just not getting it done. As an example, Mr. Scribner, did you now write were those under your bylines, two articles in a monthly publication about the Capeless Knight district attorney's race? Did you write those for which publication?
For Fred's.
Right here. I would just say those are far and away the two best articles written about the district attorney's race, which otherwise was covered in almost a complete vacuum. And in terms of trying to understand what the issues were in that case, in that race. And of course, from the work I do, by the way, the other thing that's striking to me on a daily basis is occasionally appearing in district and superior court and so forth, is just the dreadful coverage that's given legal news in the community. I don't have a legal or transcript, but the coverage of the court system is usually just dreadful. It's wildly inaccurate.
You can call it the treagle.
And you hear about lawyers testifying to juries as opposed to making arguments. So, I would just echo what Paul said. The traditional media just for reasons of resources and reasons in some ways beyond their control, just aren't getting it done. And I have great respect for Bill's ability to come up with different ideas. So I'm here tonight largely because he asked me to come.
Yeah, my name is Alex Spensk. I'm the general manager at WCFM, which is the college radio station. I work with Matt and Brian should hopefully be coming later with our treasurer, but my term is almost up. Both our terms are almost up, unfortunately, but we've made an effort this past semester to incorporate more community members into the radio station, open house, and Matt said all this. And we were really looking to do, to open WCFM up and, to the community so that they can all similarly employ it in a way that Mr. Scribner was talking about, and use it as a voice for local news and local media as well, and not just get more students interested in getting on the air and doing more journalistic type stuff, and also how to get community members involved.
I should mention to a couple of people who came late that the little box there is a tape recorder from the Great Barrington Community Radio Station, and I asked them to make a podcast of this so that I don't have to take notes, and so that some people who wanted to be here tonight who can't be here would be able to hear what happened. We ran out of agendas because I'm just absolutely overjoyed at the number of people who are here. But on the agenda, I thought it would be a good idea to just ask if anybody has anything you want to add to the agenda tonight, because we now have exactly an hour left and a lot of great stuff to talk about. But I don't want to leave something out that somebody thinks we really need to cover. If not, what I'd like to do is start by kind of doing a little interview for the group here with Paul Hopkins and Rich Taskin about something that they did on election night, which was pretty unique in the area, and I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about it. What they did is Adelphia Cable used to own the cable franchise in North Berkshire. It's now part of Time Warner, but there is an interconnect that allows public access programming to be received by Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown. And what these two guys did is using Paul's experience for years and years and years as a radio announcer on WNMB, MMB, they did a live call-in commentary show on election night. And what I wanted to ask you guys is, what was the reaction from the community? Being realistic about it, what is the potential for doing anything like that on any kind of a regular basis? What would it take in terms of volunteer help, resources, and what do you think it would do for the community? Either one of you.
Real quick, I went into this thinking this will be a blast. It's cable access. There's going to be 25 people watching it, so I can say anything and do anything I want. I had 25 people tell me that they saw it, which tells me many more than 25 people were watching it. It was very low tech. It was just Rich and I behind a desk. We had a telephone, literally, that you could see on the desk, and we would push the button. There was a microphone mounted on the telephone to capture the signal. We were able to bring up some other election results on a laptop that they could, you know, they could bring the image up on TV. We had a blast. We went for 2 hours, which was long enough to bring in results locally, and that was really our main function, was to be a source for local election results. I used to do this on the radio station for years and years before electronic voting, when we would be on the air until 2 or 3 in the morning waiting while the hand-counted ballots were finished. This was just entirely new. I think we did a reasonably good job. We're going to, next time, assuming there's a next time, try to go a little more high-tech, use some more electronic resources. But it's gonna involve a lot of people. And if you pay people or don't pay them, will make a big difference in whether or not it goes forward. David will tell you, it's all about the money in the end. Things happen. Pardon?
Unfortunately, it's about corporate profits.
Rich, what was your reaction to the experience?
Well, I think, you know, people tend to surf on election night, but pretty substantial.
But they stopped when they got the Channel 17.
Same experience that Paul had. Just a large number of people obviously saw us. And I had done it in the past with a fellow named, now deceased, Fred Skirbo, but, you know, you just sort of hear over time. What had happened for me was, on primary night, I was pretty interested in the state Senate race, and the Eagle had promised, I guess, they were going to have live logging. At about 8:30, they finally had some information. I mean, it was just dreadful. And again, not to take shots here, but the commentary was just terrible. And what we did was, we were able to get the candidates to come on the phone, very fired up. David Cables came on. Must have been on his fifth cup of coffee or something. And we managed to get some of the other people on. Matt Kinnaman did not call in. He had been scheduled to call in, but we did get Ben Downey early on. We got Bosley, of course, and a few of the other people, other people whose names was on the ballot. We're on the ballot. We had volunteers to collect local returns, which we were able to get from Adams, Williamstown, North Adams, Cheshire, still hand counts, and a few other communities as well. So I think people are pretty starved for information. I think part of the theme you get is that people out there, there's a market for the information or whatever the proper word is, that's sort of a niche and that's not being fulfilled. And I think that the intensity of the response we got took me a bit of that.
And honestly, I've done a number of things on cable TV, and I think that it's still the novelty of seeing someone you know on TV. I know it's such a base thing, but it's like, hey, I know him. I'm going to watch this instead of ABC, you know, or something like that. but that's okay. If they watch, that's all the better.
So you both, in your own minds, there's an appetite on your own personal parts to doing this again. But how
it was fun.
How much could you do it as a volunteer without it getting in the way of the rest of your life?
I mean, limited. You know, I've had conversations with people who said you should do a nightly newscast, you know, just a quick wrap of the day's events in North Berkshire. It's easy to say. That's a number of people working several hours each day to put something like that together. But doing something like that, you know, once in election season or spring elections and fall elections, absolutely, we can do that. And you have enough volunteers involved in Northern Berkshire Community Television to make that happen.
Yeah. At the radio station in Great Barrington, have you guys been making an effort to do news per se?
It's been a very individual pursuit because the way we're set up, set up where individuals to have airtime apply on an individual basis. On election night, we did do. We picked up a live stream from Brad Friedman, runs an operation called Brad Blog, which is out of the Bay Area, but he's really interested in election machinery. You know, he's into the the idea of voting machines and the whole all that issue around election integrity. And so they did an absolutely great feed for almost like five straight hours with breaks for local program. We were one of maybe eight stations that picked it up. It was primarily an internet stream. But we then came in using the web to fill in the local results. And then, so that's the way we did it. It was relatively, we were, what, from 8 to 2 in the morning?
2, 3,
With that. So, So
you were essentially using him as your network and then cutting in with local stuff.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, he's anti-corporate, so it wasn't really, I mean, it fit what we're trying to do. It fit our mission. It fit our sound, you know, and then it allowed us to have that sort of platform to insert the local content that we needed to. And I was also on the ballot for school committee. I had the honor to announce my own defeat. you don't get that opportunity too often in your life. We would like to go that direction, but it would have to be a collaborative.
Yeah.
You know, in the same sort of thing where, you know, we support each other and make it a collaborative effort. Because we don't, you know, we are all volunteer. You know, everybody has, you know, their interests and tend to pursue their interests.
Amy, could you talk a little bit about the audio work that you're starting to do on the MCLA website?
Sure. I've been podcasting since the beginning of the fall. They're 20 to 30 minute segments. They come out once a week, and right now I'm trying to have them be student life, academic life, community life. So each episode has something at each level. So I've interviewed shopkeepers and talked to people who run some nonprofits, and last week we got up our first student produced PSA. And it's a lot of fun to put together. I don't have a huge listening audience yet, but it's growing. I think it's just a matter of people don't know about it.
Jen, do you guys have a sense that people on campus are aware of that or not really yet?
I was in one of your podcasts
Tiny
week, so I mean I knew about it through that, but they've been advertising it a lot, publicizing rather, this idea, but I think that it's not really captivating students yet. I mean, I think that we're mostly selfish and only concerned about it when it's about us. So that generally, the ones that are more about student life and academic life are more engaging than the ones about community life, just generally.
Yeah. So now, what possibilities would you see, Amy, if any, to, say, feed a television broadcast with a podcast, or feed the Great Barrington radio station with a podcast?
I see us doing a lot more work with the Great Barrington radio station than I can with television, and that is our bandwidth is an issue. And I think if the bandwidth is an issue for the region, there's just not a lot of it. And depending on how it's packaged, we may be able to put up video podcasts, basically video casts, which would be easy, you know, to host that and send that out if it's a much more compressed, or to go the other way and deliver it to TV, but it's not as easy right now, I don't think, that we have the setup to go from TV to computer.
Yeah,
that's just a quick question. Could somebody just tell me, a podcast, just identify exactly what it is? I mean,
yeah,
it has to do with
iPods,
but I'm...
Let me try. It really is a cool euphemism for an audio, a file that is that you download and it plays as an audio, as a sound on your computer. And it's called podcast because typically podcasts are encoded in a particular kind of format, which is called MP3.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see that phrase MP3 usually associated with podcasts, and it'll show up on your computer as a, just as you have a file that's mystory.doc because it's a Microsoft Word document file, you might see a file on a website .mp3, and what that means is that's an audio file, and if you click on it, and if you've got either Real Player or QuickTime,
mm-hmm,
or Windows Media Player on your computer, it will just automatically play that as a sound file on your computer.
Okay.
Or if you have an iPod and iTunes,
play it on your...
Yeah, so you can play it on your iPod.
So the benefit of something like iTunes is that you can subscribe to them and it feeds it to you automatically.
Yeah.
So you don't have to remember to go back and check to see if a site is updated.
Right.
It comes to you in your mailbox.
Although the open source guy in me says that there's also aggregators,
software
packages that you can download for free that will do the same thing that iTunes will do.
You can get the MCLA podcast on Odeo and on iTunes. So that there's, you know.
Let me ask the radio guys in the room.
Thank you.
What do you see as the possibility of assembling a network that's not really a network in the sense of it being a permanent connection, but maybe a resource site that has audio files on it that each of you may have produced and contributed, but that by mutual agreement anybody can play?
Yeah, that sounds great. It's a question of who updates the website.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to do that, trying to encourage our students to turn their shows into podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're on a volunteer basis too, so it's a question of who will put in the time to do it. And but yeah, it would be great to centralize that and to have access to local news things that we could download.
Can you put the projector on? I could show you a site.
You know, I was let me fiddle with it while we talk. I was trying to get it going before we got started, and I was having trouble getting it to work.
There is a site already called Radio for All.
Yeah, I use radioforall.net a lot. And I host on archive.org, which is the sort of like the internet, the master mother library archives of the internet. And there was a guy who invented one of the key parts of the Google software, and that's how he used his fortune, is to set up terabytes worth of servers. And basically, as long as it's open source, you can host content there.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're willing to, you know, say that, you know, non-commercial, you don't have to give up your commercial rights, but, you know, for non-commercial use, it's wide open. So I host up there, and that's you know, I mean, I have literally gigs of content up there. And then you can use that and point it, something like radioforall.net or a blog, you can point back to that site. Of course, that's all moot. If you have your own server and you have space on your own server, then you can just throw away that part.
But radioforall.net is a shared site with a lot of radio programs, independent radio programs, a lot of Canadian stations, independent Canadian stations that are based up there. There's a lot of Pacifica stations, KBU in Portland puts a lot of stuff up there. There's not, the one big thing about radioforall.net is a lot of it is complete programming. There's not a lot of actualities. And that's what I would like to see, is more unedited actualities rather than
right.
neatly produced programs with that station IDs and program IDs. And I want to see somebody go, and what I do is I go and record a lecture. Mm-hmm. And I take that lecture or I do an interview. And I might take some of the little sloppy parts out and put it up. But I would rather see that up there than other people could come and get that and work with it the way they need to work with it and fit it into their context, as opposed to listening to me say, you know, this is W, you know, produced exclusively to W, good stuff. And you don't want to hear that. So, I mean, that, you know, and so that, I think it's absolutely that. Would be one of my, you know, coming to this meeting, that would be one of my goals, is to seize a framework for that kind of collaboration, whether it be a blog. I mean, it could be as simple as a blog.
Yeah, my notion would be that it would be a place that not only the collaborating radio stations could draw information from, but that the public could go to and listen to as well. And I like the idea of it not being heavily produced, because that's going to make it too complicated for volunteers. I was playing with a service that I signed up for recently called, I forget the name of it, a service where if you dial a particular phone number and put in your password, because you paid to have a relationship and it's cheap, it's, you know, $5 a month or something, you can then talk into your phone just like you're talking to an answer machine, and when you hang up, a couple of minutes later, that shows up as an audio podcast on a blog website. And I actually jokingly did a little interview with Fred, I just with my cell phone and hung up the phone, and about 3 minutes later, it was on the greylocknews.com website. And in fact, it's there now if you go and look at it later.
What service are you using?
I can't remember the
name.
One
of them went away.
Huh?
One of them was discontinued. There was a free service that was doing that they discontinued. Audio, I think, still
does
it.
Yeah, Audio still does it.
You can still do it through Audio. But yeah, that's fantastic. I tried giving that a number out to a number of our volunteers, and it was like, it was just too much for them to get beyond, you know, putting in an entry password.
It's Audio, O-D-E-O?
Yes.
For the radio...
It's called hipcast.com.
Hipcast, okay.
Yeah. And my thought was that if you had people who you trusted to not put obscenities or personal screeds or bad stuff on it, you could essentially make that a community resource where you could have people phoning in information about a meeting coming up tonight about media,
sure.
media issues or a report on a selectmen's meeting they went to where they just talk about it. And then at the radio stations, you can preview that stuff and choose whether you want to use it. Anyway, so much for that.
I have a question about the...
Yep.
If you want to tape a lecture, record a lecture, and put it up, do you have to get releases signed as you do for cable access?
I usually talk to the people that I'm lecturing, you know, that I'm capturing. A lot of times I do it at a university, and it's a professor from the university or something like that. I do not have a release form, like a standard release form.
I'm just wondering if it's going up onto a site where anybody can pull it off.
So.
If there's, I know in TV there's always concerns about.
Yeah, I mean, I consider anything I put online, I put under what's called a Creative Commons license, which is basically some rights reserved. No commercial use, but all non-commercial use is allowed. No derivative, no derivations, so people can't cut it up, but. Creative Commons is a way for content creators to designate the rights, downstream, rather than, that huge monster of copyright comes down on top of the content and locks up all permissions so that you have to go and ask for permission every time for every use. There are some uses that are just automatically permissible once you put it under a Creative Commons license. And that's typically the way I work with my content. And you know, if anybody that, you know, the people I record, you know, I just haven't really pursued it too much. I haven't had occasion yet. Anybody got excited.
Well, you can listen to WBCR online.
Right, you can, yeah, you stream online.
Which I do. So I don't have to be within 5 below Stockbridge in order to hear it. My green card doesn't allow me to go below Stockbridge.
No?
I did it.
Surely.
You know,
Joe,
too.
There it is.
Yeah. What did somebody want me to show something on there?
There's radioforall.net if you wanted to take a quick look at it. That was about a half an hour ago.
It's the number 4.
The numeral 4.
Oh.
Thank you for telling me that. I would have gone home and gotten frustrated.
Well, I wish I put something up today. I mean, I'll have to make it this time.
You have both of
us. So
it's run by it's free, run by volunteers. They take donations.
And you can load an MP3 up here, and then anybody can play it. Essentially,
right.
Well, it's probably more courteous to point to an MP3 because they, if you look over on the side, they're asking for donations. They're actually in the Hudson Valley. But they're a pretty tight to the bone sort of operation. Typically what I do is I host it at archive.org or another server, and then I point, when I upload it here, I just simply put in the metadata,
mm-hmm.
and then point back to the MP3, and then that works. And then it takes the strain off of their server.
Their servers, yeah.
Because if you upload to their server, one, it's really slow.
Really slow.
It's a slow upload, and two, it add some strain to their operation.
Yeah.
The other thing you might take a quick look at is audioport.org, which is a similar service as Fort Miami Radio.
What's that say up in the left-hand corner there? Missed it.
Oh, on the last page?
The last one you were just up. What's that say?
That's A Info's radio project.
A Info's?
Yeah. Info. It's sort of part of it's associated with Indie Media.
Jenny Novick and those guys.
So this is also a place where you can upload files?
This you have to be affiliated with Pacifica Network.
Oh, right. Okay.
But it's, you guys are running Democracy Now, right?
Yes.
We're not affiliated.
We are
with the
network, though.
WBTN.
Are you affiliated, or are you just taking it directly from...
Just taking it.
Anyway, it's a relatively minor thing to get affiliated. They want
affiliates.
It's
an issue with our station.
It's a major controversy.
It's a major issue with our station.
Yeah.
You mean just a political issue about whether...
No, affiliating. We don't mind the programming. The affiliations.
Let's
all those emails.
Let's switch gears.
Well,
from
quieted down, haven't they?
A little bit.
Let's switch gears from audio to print now. I'd like to introduce Fred Daly and Jenny Stern, who introduced themselves earlier. But they together own the Hill Country Observer, which comes out monthly, except for January. There's an old saying that newspaper editors eat snow in January. And so they've wisely decided that they won't even try to publish a paper in January, so they get a little time off. But Fred has a background as a city editor of the Glens Falls paper, and Jenny used to work for a weekly in northern Maine. And I have been helping them, you know, public disclosure, I've been helping them out a little bit to sort of make contacts and connections in the Berkshires. And the reason I got involved is because I feel that this paper is the only paper, albeit only coming out once a month, that really does do serious journalism on a regular basis, as you heard Richie Taskin say. And David has been a contributor to that. And I thought that it would be great to give them a couple of minutes of floor time to talk a little bit about what they're doing, and also encourage any of you who have a bent for freelance writing to consider helping them out, working with them, because they're a great outlet, and he's a fine editor.
Anybody need a copy?
The Observer is very low-tech. It's black and white. It doesn't even have a website at the moment. We do 15,000 copies a month. They're distributed at
400 and some locations, and we're trying to fill the gap that Steve mentioned, where as far as a lot of news organizations are concerned, the world kind of falls off a cliff at the New York-England border. We do both sides of the border. We do Berkshire, Bank, and Rutland counties on the New England side, and four counties on the New York side, Columbia, Eastern Rensselaer, Washington, Saratoga, and also one small area. So we've been doing it for 2 years, and we're one of the few free papers that that is still dedicated to public service journalism. Jenny and I are both Simon's Rock graduates, so that's our Berkshire's connection. We were both former Berkshire County residents in that period. And we've been lucky to have some great experienced journalists from the Berkshires, like David, and Linda Carmen, who wrote The Advocate for many years, and doing some writing for us.
And one of the things I've observed in the research I've done for the Media Giraffe Project is a real synergy between things that happen on the web and things that happen in print. It's a synergy that the mainstream media is just starting to figure out. But there are places like Village Soup in Camden, Maine, which is a website that was started in about 1996 by a couple of people to serve the area around Camden and Waldo County and Knox County. And originally, it was only a website, but the thing became so successful and essentially became the principal source of news for people all over that area, that they realized that they had to start a weekly newspaper to continue to move the brand on to places to people who didn't have access to the web. And one of the things I hope a collaborative might have is a relationship with some print product in the area, because you can use print to promote what is going on the web, and you can use web print to promote what's going on in print. And so one notion in inviting Jenny and Fred here tonight was to see whether there was some way that they might be able to collaborate on whatever we might get going here. Do you guys have a sense from the 2 years now that you've been publishing a regional publication about what the hurdles or opportunities would be if we were to try to put something together with this broad a distribution of interests that was multimedia, that wasn't just print?
Well, I think certainly, you know, as long as we have a print publication, you know, as you say, you can use that to direct people to a website or to radio or, you know, anywhere else. So I think there's a lot of potential in that.
Also with us tonight, by the way, is Jeff Potter, who is owner of the Shelburne Falls Independent and also an early typesetter for The Advocate years and years ago. And
the old Comp 2.
Yeah, the old Comp 2. Jeff, I want to show you Jeff's website, because he's another example of a print guy who has dived into the web. Is that right? Doesn't sound right.
Has divin
into the web. Anyway, what is it? It's
sfindependent.net.
What's unique about Jeff's site is he covers breaking news on his website, because his paper only comes out every other week. But you also require subscribers to get past the first paragraphs, you have to be a subscriber. So it's sort of a perk for a print subscriber. But most important, you are really with this website becoming the go-to place for news in Shelburne Falls.
I think that's still, we're still working toward that.
Yep.
But it certainly gives us unprecedented opportunity to transcend publishing frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're every other week, which as we were discussing at dinner, is the lousiest frequency anybody's ever worked with.
Mm-hmm.
But if something happens in between issues or there's or for instance with election results, I can go on and within 30 seconds have it posted live. I can also control whether people have full access to it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain debates or what have you. We put some video up in the past election season that we've certainly made available to everybody, not just subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
So have you haven't done anything with audio yet?
Not by itself, no.
As you've listened to this group tonight so far, what do you see as the opportunities or challenges of trying to pull together any kind of a collaborative?
I think time and organizational structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I think you're really, it's like somebody else said that you all have other, the real jobs. Heck, I still design books for a living. So it's not for the faint of heart. And volunteers are, you have to look at very hard at sustained enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
Because, that may die very quickly and you're left with a newspaper or a website or a dead air on the radio.
Mm-hmm. And aside, by the way, about the Village Soup site I just showed you a minute ago, is on one of the handouts that most of you got a copy of, the back side of it are some tips by the founder of Village Soup about what is needed to mount a successful local online news operation. I won't go over it now, but it's just probably useful reading at some point. I wonder if we could go to the Southern Vermont College folks now and ask you to maybe talk a little bit more about this idea of this community media center and what you see. What's the potential for that being broader than just Bennington? I mean, is it something that could potentially incorporate, say, a collaboration with MCLA or with a radio station in Great Barrington? Or what do you think?
I think it definitely is looking at a broader collaborative model, but with the idea of enhancing our local service.
Mm-hmm.
And also because we are an education institution and training people to work in community media across the region, across the country,
mm-hmm.
and to think of... as citizens, what role they're going to play in their communities through
mm-hmm.
how they filter media, how they interact with the media, how they seek media. I think that we'll be looking at a much broader geographic range of partners and also across all media as well. Why don't you speak a little bit more to that?
The idea is just in its initial stages of being formulated. We're hoping to get together in the spring, early spring, a panel, kind of session of brainstorming about what this configuration of these various components and how it interacts with the community, and how we have, by the way, an additional responsibility which a traditional college radio station doesn't have, and that is it's a commercial radio station. And like Jenny and Fred, they have to make some money. And we have advertisers. And while its mission is to be a independent source of information and resource for the community, still there is that component to it that is not speaking right. But Bob, I know Bob, and we've been in many meetings. We've talked to Don Thurston about this at length, about how to be independent and yet be economically sustainable, which I think is a big challenge actually for independent media. And I'm hoping we can maybe help to solve that.
Well, the radio station almost breaks even for the college. So we have two funders. We have advertisers and Southern Vermont College.
And it's our laboratory.
One of the things that we're trying to do is to really break even with advertising. because the reality is, you have to have money to do any of these projects, really. You know, you can have a lot of enthusiastic volunteers, but, you know, they usually last about two programs or something like that, and then they lose their...
Well, there's advantage to having a compact where we can share, where we have locally produced, and I have, I mean, really good programming. Now, I love your guys' programming down in Great Barrington, but, you know, this is locally produced, could be quite excellent.
I thought about when you were talking was the, with a commercial station, you know, we have spots, we have programs, you know, that in order to get people to listen, they don't just tune in and whatever's on. I mean, you know, the whole secret of getting people to listen is to have times when they know what's going to be on the station. You know, what kind of programming? What is it going to be? Is it just going to be any stuff or not? So, like when you were talking about a whole bunch of stuff coming in, it would seem to me that for our commercial station, you would have to have some topics or some kind of, people would, you know, I'm sure you all know that radio is very, very personal, you know. Mm-hmm. And once you get hooked on something, you're hooked. And you don't want to change that dial, especially what we found is they certainly don't want to hit the from FM to AM thing. In fact, many people don't even know that their radio has AM. So, the way you get listeners is to put on programs that catches them, and then it becomes a personal thing. It's a very emotional thing. You know? Mm-hmm. And
one of the ideas I had was to make to as an example of the kind of idea that we'd be tossing around is I'd like to take the morning newscast program at WBTN and broadcast it actually from a coffee house, local coffee house, and via remote. And people could actually walk into the coffee house and see the program being broadcast. And you could actually comment. Say, you know, to be, and you could actually interview people, and it would become a gathering place. And so I see media as a tool to create community and create a sense of community, create a sense of individual belonging to a community. And one of the ways is to bring the media out of its confines and professionalism and its arrogance and bring it right downtown, so to speak.
Well, one of the things we talked about was farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going to the
yeah.
Cape Barrington farmer's
yeah.
market, having a table at the farmer's market and broadcasting a show for an hour each day at the farmer's market. And then you get farm reports, you can get, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you could do there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree completely.
I'm sure Paul is thinking about remotes right now and all the remotes you've done over the years at a truly local radio station in the old days.
It sounds like a blast.
Well, you were formidable. I mean, we had to watch out for you.
Oh,
okay. We had to listen.
Paul,
we were reporting to those in North Adams. It was, we had to listen to you because you were dangerous.
What's your success, though, with the election night coverage, though? Yeah. I think the public are starved for
yeah.
that kind
well, and
of...
Well, I was going to follow your comments. You also have to give people something they want to hear. And, I mean, that's as obvious as that is.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be careful as we talk about whatever comes of this that people want to listen to something.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most listened to show on National Public Radio? It's Car Talk, folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Morning Edition. It's not All Things Considered. It's the guys who are yucking it up for an hour. But they're giving people information in a form that they enjoy listening to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would just say words of caution there. You really have to pay attention
yeah.
to how people want to receive it,
you know,
what they want to hear about.
We found there are hundreds of ideas of what could be done.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, what we found is that you have to pick and choose, you know, your battles or what you can actually get done, especially on a, you know, 24/7 situation where you have to fill the airways and you have to be consistent about having programs out at a certain time.
Right.
And then you have to have people that are, we have a couple of volunteers that have been there for 5 years, free of charge, you know, doing one show a week, an hour show, or sometimes they do two. But that's a rare person that will make that kind of commitment.
Well, and then I'm sorry, back to what you were saying. People are starved for things.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked for the radio stations here, I did their morning radio program, a call-in show called Opinion. Had been on the air in that 8:30 a.m. time slot since 1968.
Mm-hmm.
It was taken off last year, sometime after Vox Media, whatever their name is, bought the stations. It's a travesty in my mind. It was one of the few outlets for people to debate in this area, and it's gone. I can't believe that they took that off the air. And it was a revenue producer for them.
And I wonder, too, if the success of your election night coverage, people are surfing, they see that, and it's sort of the reality news equivalent of reality TV, and people are looking for a non-synthetic version of the news that... local voices, people they know, people, you know, their first grade teachers, they're talking about what's going on at or what happened at this school board meeting.
Sure.
Or
in
some ways,
what would it take to recreate the Opinion show on a collaborative of WCFM and WJJW? You'd have to have a person paid to do it. I mean, because you couldn't sustain
it
on a
daily
basis.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that I think it's sort of old media thinking that you have to be able to schedule around the clock because now you can schedule to your audience so that you may not have farmers listening at 7 o'clock at night, but the farmers could listen to it on demand.
Yeah.
I mean, I never get to hear This American Life anymore on the radio, but I get to hear it whenever I want on my podcast.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's the difference between broadcast and the internet. The internet is really narrowcasting,
right.
And your ability to narrowcast, you know, from that standpoint, is
so
I mean,
you could
there could be a synergy there.
Right, right.
But
so that doesn't mean that you can't fill your broadcast. It means that your audience may be split between people who are listening to it on the radio and people who are listening to it in the podcast. And if you're commercial, you can still have at the beginning of a podcast. This episode is brought to you by, you know, the sheep farm down the street.
Also, a lot of the programs that are produced for WBCR are done at home.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my home there's going
to
be one.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Too.
You can look at bimbopolitics.com as it's going on.
Is it going to podcast as well?
Yeah.
Great.
So it's a, you know, to get people involved in producing content, you don't have to have them at the station anymore. They can do it at home and actually just, you know, email it in.
Yeah, well,
so
we have a number of shows that...
Oh, that's Julianne, yes.
No, we can even go to the point where we have the servers, you know, automated and automatically can download from a feed, from an RSS feed.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll automatically load it in, put it into the right folder, and then play it at the right time. So that, you know, once we set it, that's the way with Democracy Now! Rolls off the internet, gets picked up, and gets put on the air. But another point that slides along with beside that one is that we have 60-some-odd programmers in our community of a town of how many people live in Great Barrington?
8,000.
About 8,000 in our listening area, and we have 60-some-odd programmers plus... I mean, you're already beginning to look at, you know, the word gets around. I mean, it's an organic.
Who would produce programs?
What do you mean?
60 people producing programs.
65 programs, more like 70 to 80 programmers.
Yeah.
And what is a program?
Oh, a half-hour long show, an hour-long show, an hour-and-a-half, two-hour-long show. Depends on what they want. At least we try
and
schedule
them. Yeah.
So I think the thing that's different about the two models you have is the Great Barrington Station is a social context where people meet and greet, and it's part of the downtown. And I think if you're still doing what you were doing, it's voice tracking, it's more of a commercial style. It's not much fun to do that kind of radio. and you don't want to have, it's just a different kind of radio. It's the clear channel model. And to me, as I hear you talk, one of the big questions to answer is, are we talking about journalism as a product like any other product that's marketed to an audience, or is it a process that we're talking about, a community process of people getting together physically and working together and learning and having fun, and as a byproduct, an important byproduct of that process, there's journalism, there's radio programming, there's print, there's web, but it's not the whole thing. And what you see in commercial broadcasting and commercial journalism today is that the product is the whole thing, and like any product, it's being produced at the lowest possible cost to deliver the highest possible profit margin. And unless you focus on that difference, mm-hmm. I think you run the risk of going down that the road that we're trying to escape from.
To you, and then a quick observation and a time check.
Yeah, I have a question with regard to blogs.
Yep.
I saw they're on the agenda here. I'm not an actual blogger, but I've been reading a heck of a lot in the last 6 months because I wanted to start a couple different ones. And your comment, sir, I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Steve.
I'm David. That's one of the things, whether you're reading Clue Train Manifesto or Blog Marketing or Blog Rules, there's a lot of books out there. I don't want to believe everything I read, but they talk about authenticity. And one of the reasons the blogs have had this huge expansion is it's going against the old model of marketing. So you're really tuning in on a very consistent, persistent, whatever basis to what the people want. And, you know, I just would like to hear a little bit more about how blogs... Amy,
yeah.
Were you going to talk a little bit about the blogs? Is that on the agenda I thought I saw here? But anyway, Yeah.
Well, we're starting to run short of time because we're going to have to all be out of the building at 8 o'clock. But as I noted in the agenda, people who want to keep talking, we can just walk across to the Williams Inn and pull some chairs together and keep talking there. But before we go too much farther, I would like to recognize our guest from Images Cinema. Because we've talked a little bit about an idea that may or may not involve Southern Vermont College, and that is the idea of applying for a grant from the Knight Foundation. The other side of the handout that I gave you that had information about Village Soup had a little bit of information about the Knight Brothers 21st Century News Challenge. The Knight Foundation is one of the largest foundations in America. It's money left over from the Knight Ritter operation, and about 6 months ago, they came out with a challenge to media, new media people all over the country, both commercial and non-commercial, nonprofit, and said, send us your ideas on a very, very simple application form, and they're going to be handing out money to ideas that they think will represent new ways of using journalism to connect and bolster physical communities around the United States. And we think there may be enough interesting stuff going on here to sustain an application which we think maybe would be written by Southern Vermont College's fiscal sponsor. But one of the ideas that I had talked to the journalism program officer at Knight Foundation about was the idea of trying to get a collaborative of people producing video that could be turned into a weekly tailor to run on a movie screen once a week. We've talked a little bit about this, about the idea, and Images is ready to step forward and sort of participate in this experiment and the idea would be to try and break through to an audience of people who don't necessarily read the news in the newspaper, who would see it on a movie screen. It would have to be produced in a way that was compelling enough that people wouldn't just see it as a distraction and annoyance before the feature film. So
Back to the Future, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of a Back to the Future approach, back to the old newsreels. But the difference is that now, if you've got the volunteer support, the technology of producing video is gone to practically zero in terms of the cost. And so we think it's least technically feasible on a local level to do this kind of thing. And the program officer I talked to was very intrigued by this idea. And so my hope is that that's a hook that might get us the opportunity to fund on a seed basis a broader collaboration that involves not just this idea, but also trying to involve students on an outreach basis in our high schools. Producing media involves maybe some kind of an audio podcast network that might involve the low power and non-commercial radio stations in the area. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about this, and also that it might involve WillyNet as well, which is the public access facility here in Williamstown, and of course there are other public access facilities in the other communities.
I don't know that I have much more to add other than what you said, but we've spoken about it when we're filling out about training people and putting it in their hands, and there is a concern about the audience and it being very short. It doesn't have to be overly produced, but the content has to be relevant and to grab people's interest, and also to expose them to something they might not even think that they can be part of.
Mm-hmm.
How does that get on the screen? We talk about a movie screen.
Mm-hmm. Digital projection. We have digital projection. So we can do a DVD or run it through a DV cam.
How much digital projection do you have to use right now? If I went to a movie down there.
It's a pre-show DVD the pre-show that we have is on DVD, but our nightly films are on 35mm. And most independent films that come in are digital. So if we have independent filmmakers coming in,
how long will those segments be?
We haven't even talked about that. I mean, a minute or two at the most, I think. I couldn't imagine anything being longer than 3 minutes. It would have to be an awful good story or a package of stories.
Well, who's producing that kind of content right now?
Well, nobody. I mean, the notion would be, I think if we go for a Knight Foundation grant, that most of the money would go into paying people to produce content.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question becomes, when you get to the end of the feed trough at Knight, what sustains it? And I don't know that we've got the answer to that right now, nor does Knight, nor do many other people around the country right now who are trying to figure out how to make this stuff work. There's the PTO model, which is a sort of a self-sustaining volunteer organization, which is what you guys are working on in South County right now. And I think those things may be viable if they're done very carefully. We should probably start to wrap up. And I'm just wondering if anybody has any suggestions for next steps other than what I put on the sheet there, which was, well, one key question is, do we want to actually take the step of forming any kind of an organization, or is this very informal periodic get-together sufficient? That's one question I have. The other question is anybody interested in pursuing any of the other question marks that I listed there? One is a web-based calendar of events for the region, which is something that could then be fed, for example, to Fred and Jenny's publication and printed and
checked with the Community Coalition. They just launched something.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
The Berkshire Community Coalition?
Yeah,
Northern Berkshire Community
Coalition.
Oh, that's wonderful. Seeing that there was a need?
Yeah. And you feed them the information, and they put the information on the site. It's not like you can...
Do you know what the site... Is it up, and do you know what the address is?
No, off the top of my head.
Okay.
Well, iBerkshire's does.
Yeah, what about
iBerkshire's does quite a lot of stuff,
yeah. So it may be that resource is starting to
gel. The
Community
Coalition one is, you look at a calendar, 31 days, and it says this is going on this day.
Ah, that's
it's
perfect.
Kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, the thing about iBerkshire's for us in Great Barrington is that it has some penetration into Southern Berkshire.
Mm-hmm.
My concern would be, I mean, if we were to become part of a collaborative, I really feel that it needs any tools that get developed need to have penetration into Southern Berkshire.
Yeah. Is anybody interested in helping the Southern Vermont people with cranking out this Knight Foundation grant if they decide to go forward with it? If so, email me and I'll connect you up with them.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can really form a compact, because I think a necklace of independent radio stations, but that would be only one component of our community media sector. But this collaboration would be wonderful.
Yeah, this question of or the concern of organizing and sustaining, I think that I would hope that as the idea of a center for community media reaches more maturity, that in part it can be one of those provide some of that
architecture for that kind of thinking and organizing and resource sharing, whether it be in developing some other form of media sharing tools and you know, shared vocabulary among organizations that we can move this stuff really fluidly between our outlets. But
I'd be happy. I would volunteer to work specifically on a piece like that because it dovetails so nicely with what I'm already
doing,
you know, pieces that I'm already been involved in and doing, like particularly.
You mean the programming collaboration?
The content,
piece?
Yeah, the content sharing, you know, developing a structure and a framework for sharing content amongst, you know. And that could even go to, you know, routing, you know, my journalism years are so far back. tasking, what do you guys call it?
Assigning.
Assigning, yeah, you know, story assignments, you know, where, you know, I see this event's up here, I can't make it, I can't make it to Northern Berkshire this, you know, tonight. Do you guys have somebody that could go capture that?
Or are you going to?
Coordinating coverage. And there's, likewise, if something was happening in Simon's Rock, you know, likelihood is I'm going to be capturing, you know, if there's something significant going in Simon's Rock, I'm, you know, I'm going to catch it and have it available. So.
Could I say one?
Yeah.
Any of you people that live in Williamstown or North Adams, if you just see, I'd be interested to know if you can get our signal, WBTN.
Yeah.
AM 1370.
On the car radio, yes. In the house, no. That's my experience. The car radio is just newer and more sensitive.
And anybody wants to get our stream, we're at berkshireradio.org.
Listen, please.
Listen, please. We love it.
It's on my desktop.
One of the nice things that your station did during the Berkshire Film Festival was Paul Rapp and a couple other people had little recorders. And we were just talking to people.
It was actually that little recorder.
Oh, it was that
little recorder. Hello.
It was great. And then when I went down the next day, I was hearing there was a talk show and they were feeding in clips from the reception or wherever we were at, and it was quick, it was easy, people saw it was happening, so they saw that it was easy. I think that's part of people becoming involved need to know that it's not brain surgery, that they don't have to be trained for 10 days, they just need to push a few buttons.
It was a lot of fun. We captured all the comments, all the through the film festival on a CF card, compact flash card on this machine. I walked into the studio, plugged this straight into the computer and was playing straight off the recorder. I mean, it didn't, introduction, actuality.
I think one of the wonderful things about what you're doing down there, and maybe what other LP, low-power FM stations are doing or aren't, is that people, ordinary people, who want to have something to say and want to produce a program, can actually do it. It's wonderful. I mean, you really get a big, your audience is also your programmers. You know, it's remarkable.
Is there a new LP station? I was looking the dial today, and WBNG or
in North Adams?
I think it might have been North. I don't know if it was North Adams. It wasn't.
Well, isn't there some Christian station?
Yes. Yeah, an LP Christian.
Yeah.
The other
LP station in Berkshire County is that. There's one also, a dormant one, well, sort of dormant, at Taconic High School. They have a low power FM station.
It's actually, it's been lighting up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's.
But there's another license. Low power FM stations are easy to, well, not easy, but are available.
No, not anymore.
Not anymore?
They stopped it again.
They stopped it again?
There was only the one application period for the 3 weeks.
They talked about penetrating more into urban air, the next round, possible next round.
There's a full power round coming up next year.
Let me explain how we can keep in touch. There's a wiki at braylocknews.org as opposed to com. Which is coming up. on which I posted this meeting. And if you want to know kind of what's going on with what we talked about tonight, just remember that URL, greylocknews.org. And what you see when you type that in may change, but at whatever sort of the latest potential meeting or potential project going on, I'll try to keep up there. I'll try to change that periodically. I'm hoping that maybe the radio folks will start to connect on this idea of a collaboration, and that there'll be action on this idea of applying for a night grant. I'll take, is the notepad I circulated around somewhere?
Yes, right here.
Did everybody put your name, phone number, and email address? I will, I'll post a link at greylocknews.org to this list, which I'll put up sometime in the next couple days. I can't do it for 24 hours because I got a busy day tomorrow. But it'll be up within a couple of days. As well as hopefully a link to the MP3 file of this conversation tonight. And I'm happy to spend a little more time across at the Williams Inn. But before you walk out, please have a little juice and chocolate chip cookies if you want.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, it's so weird. You can't, and you can't get it.
Time, and I said to him, you know, Alan, I'm on the stage doing anything. He said, I know, you're from Checkerboard Corner until just north of the ball field. Like, yeah.